Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and today I'm joined by James Kovacek, and I hope I pronounced your last name correctly, or even the first name, I should say.
Hey, thanks, Fred. Well, it's great to be here. You got the first name right, last name pretty close, better than most. Kovacevic.
Kovacevic. Oh, okay. So I'll have to remember that. I get everything in my last name from alphabet to the guy with the long last name to you name it. So I know the feeling. So we've known each other now for, geez, I think almost a year or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's about a year.
Right. And you've started your own podcast called Rooted in Reliability and joined the reliability.fm podcast network. So, and that show seems to be getting some traction and picking up some audience. So that's been pretty cool.
Yeah. I believe we just finished our 25th episode.
Oh, good. Congratulations.
And I know we broke, you know, over 2000 downloads. So doing quite well. I'm happy. It's been an interesting experience. Good one to learn as well.
That is. It really is. And I like your format where it's a mix of interviews and some tutorial type pieces. So it's a nice blend of topics. And you tend to focus on maintenance reliability. And so that's why I wanted to invite you over to the Speaking of Reliability. And hopefully I can get you as a regular over here.
I'd be happy to. Yeah, we focus heavily on asset management, maintenance, and reliability engineering as it relates to manufacturing and maintenance.
Okay. And we, of the co-hosts that are on Speaking of Reliability, some of us have worked occasionally in that world, but it's not been any of ours dominant specialty or primary area of focus. So I'm glad to add you to the list, and if not for just a couple of episodes, but in an ongoing basis, because it is a big part of the audience of the Ascendo Reliability and of the podcast. And I got a few messages from people that are saying, hey, you know, what about this maintenance stuff? And so one of them in particular is from Ziad, if I think I've got the name right, that he's been a big fan. So I certainly appreciate that. I don't know how many of those messages you've gotten, James, for your podcast, but whenever you hear somebody say, oh, I listen to it all the time, or like, makes your day.
Absolutely.
And so anyway, he said, you know, what do you guys think about reliability and business strategy, but related to engineering maintenance and management? So I believe Zed is really in the asset management world, but is looking at how you tie the reliability work into the business strategy. And you, the little I know about asset management, it seems to be driven by business strategy to a large extent.
Absolutely. If you step back and take a look at business strategy and asset management strategy, they're completely interlinked. The asset management strategy is there to support the organizational goals and the long-term vision and success of the organization. So you can't achieve that high level of organizational success if you're poor at asset management. It doesn't work. You're going to spend way more money than you need to. So it's very critical that you define that up front. You define that relationship between reliability, asset management, with that business strategy and how it supports it.
Well, when you're talking about business strategy, the thing that comes to my mind is like a mining operation. If they know they need a certain capacity of hauling capability, say I'm thinking of those monster trucks that aren't all souped up for use in an arena or a mud pit, but are working trucks, but they're huge and they haul huge amounts of material. And you calculate, oh, I need this amount of capacity to feed the next step in the process, right? Down to the plant, out of the mine. And the strategy part is, well, what's my capacity? How many trucks do I need to fill that capacity? And then the strategy part comes into, well, how much redundancy do I need, or how much extra capacity do I need to account for downtime and regular maintenance on those vehicles? Is that a clear, is that consistent with the way you think about these connections?
It's very, very close. You need to have define what is required from that asset up front. How is it going to bring that value to the organization? In the case of those trucks, it's how much tonnage can it move in a given hour to keep that downstream process running?
Right.
And then you're exactly right about the redundancy. If you cannot maintain and keep that stuff running at the level you require, then you have to buy additional trucks. And that's a huge capital expenditure you probably really don't want to spend, and you don't need to. So by properly resourcing and defining that asset management strategy and the pieces within it, it allows you to really drive business performance, because now you may even be able to reduce how many trucks you're buying up front, because mm-hmm. you're maintaining them better, you're keeping them on the road, and that frees up cash flow to operate the business, to invest in marketing and sales and all those other things that keep the business moving.
That's right. But it doesn't apply just to trucks in a mining operation. It's the same for bottling equipment or process equipment in a chemical plant or anywhere.
Exactly. Any type of manufacturing, fleet management, it all applies.
Yeah. But that strategy part and the amount of resources you're putting into place and the basics, the theory of, we'll run the trucks for two shifts a day, and one shift they're going to be available every day for maintenance and upkeep and cleaning and whatever. Well, you and I know that doesn't always happen. That transition from here's the theory and where we sourced it to what actually happens breaks down pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why when you start thinking about reliability and asset management and the overall business strategy, you need the high level support and drive from them to make it work. If asset management isn't held in high regards at the very top levels, it's not going to happen down at the lower levels. But if it is a major priority of those senior leaders of the organization, they're going to drive that down and hold sites accountable to it, because they're looking not just at the here and now, but the overall value that asset or set of assets is delivering to the business over time.
Mm-hmm.
It's that total life cycle cost, not just the upfront cost.
Well, that's in contrast to what I see in so many different facilities is the end of quarter push. And I'm sure you've run into this. And that comes from the senior managers.
It does. And one of the difficulties with asset management and linking it to that business strategy is being able to hold yourself to account for that strategy. It's like you said, it's easy, end of the quarter. Nope, we're going to run that asset farther. We're going to cut down that maintenance time, so on and so forth.
Right.
And you know what? Those decisions are probably still going to happen in a good asset management program,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to be evaluated based on risk, based on the the probability of failure, the consequences of failure.
Right.
What could happen if we don't do that maintenance? You know, it's not just a decision they're making without thinking about it. Now they're actually evaluating it. They're walking through that standardized criteria that was set up as part of that asset management program
mm-hmm.
to evaluate what is the true benefits of this and what are the potential risks that we will experience. Will we reduce that asset's life by 50% if we do this? Will we be subjected to a shutdown now at the end of this quarter because we didn't do all the stuff we had to do to keep it going?
That's right. Yeah. I've been in a couple of plants where the first week after the end of the quarter is basically a shutdown to catch up on all the maintenance and repairs and get rid of all the jerry rigs they put in place to keep things running for the last month.
Absolutely. It's sad. It's unfortunate because now you're doing stuff twice. You probably didn't identify the root cause the first time you worked on it because it was such a panic to get it going.
Right.
And that same issue is going to come up again now because you didn't root cause it and work through it.
Well, I also see this in product development teams where time to market or cost or one or more of the other business priorities dominates. And maintenance isn't always, even in a plant, isn't always the top or most dominant piece. You still got to get products out the door. And so it's got to be in balance. And I think there's always going to be trade-offs. So the top-down support and asset management, and the overall strategy, and then how that transcends into the day-to-day work tasks of making things happen. That's all important. I also think it has to be flexible to the business priorities of the day or the week.
Absolutely. But one of the things too you need to consider when you're looking at an asset management program, it's not just operations and maintenance, or maybe include engineering and procurement. You're also including marketing in that, mm-hmm. and the sales teams in that, because they can give you that good forecast. And if you can forecast what your production's needs are, you might not have that quarter crunch or end of the year crunch that you got to do, because you've gone through, you've done your due diligence, you know what the market needs, mm-hmm. and you can level load that, or you can balance it out a little bit.
I'm laughing because in product development, I always blame the software guys for all the problems that we have. But I never thought to blame the marketing guys for getting good forecasting and get our product delivery dates accurate, things like that. I'll have to use that in the future.
But it plays a huge role in how you're going to run that asset and what that asset needs to do.
Yeah, very true. And one of the clients I worked with was a bottling plant, and they were looking at improving their uptime of this line that they had. And the intent was, what they noticed was, is that when they ran the line for a long run, they had different size bottles they filled and different kinds of fluids they put in it. But for the long runs, the uptime of the equipment in the entire line was very, very high. And at the start, after a changeover, it took them about a day or 2 days to refine and tweak the system into place. And so they were looking at adding redundancy in certain places and doing some major modifications to some of the equipment, or even putting up two parallel lines in order to give them excess capacity to do these changeovers and be more effective. And, you know, and it was a tens of millions of dollar type decision. It was amazing how it tied the maintenance of, and the, which included the, in what I, in my world, I would call early life failures, is after they did a changeover, they had lots of the equipment would jam or shut down. And a lot of times it was very, very temporary, but there'd be one every 3-4 seconds.
And that's what, you know, I refer to as first hour efficiency.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good term for it.
And, you know, that's so common when you're dealing with production lines that do changeovers, especially if there's a lot of different SKUs with different size products. It's very common. But instead of investing in that line, you need to take a step back. And what is actually causing this? Well, mm-hmm. chances are you don't have a standardized procedure to make that changeover happen. You don't have markings to identify what specific set points everything should be set at. Go back to the basics for something like that. You look at, you know, your 5S methodology, mm-hmm, maybe mm-hmm. do some single minute exchange of dyes, label everything, basic procedures. Implementing those basic things doesn't cost nearly as much as a second production line.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to get those in place quicker than a second production line. And you're going to save all that capital expenditure.
But it was one of those things that I think they had a hard time believing that the combination of their maintenance team and their operators could actually do the changeovers. And it was one of the vendors for the filler machine that they had, piece of equipment, that suggested pretty much what you were talking about, is have designated set points for how you set the machines and have them basically drilled in so that you pull up a detent and move the guides over to a specific spot for the 64-ounce size bottles, for example, and minimize the amount of adjustability of the equipment, because that was killing them. Because every shift would come in for the start of a new run of a bottle size, and they would make their own adjustments because of the way they thought it should run. Yes. And none of them was close. It took them all the whole shift to sort it out.
And that all goes back to, you know, some of the basic principles of any good management system. Standard operating procedure, mm-hmm. you know, standards that are in place, you know, keeping stuff clean, easy to use, you know, training capability, all those things go into play into that ability to, you know, drive performance as soon as you start up.
Well, part of it, I mean, I agree that standard operating procedures and cleaning up the process and discipline has a big part of it. And even things like shadow boards for the tools that you need for a changeover, having things clearly labeled and clearly marked and immediately available, ready to go, is all important. But I think there's a softer side to that also. Is this one plant I was in, they also had a big scoreboard up on the wall in the shift, basically where they met with the teams coming between shifts, that talked about each shift's uptime score. And they were competitive on that. There was either a bonus or it was a minimum bragging rights, but there was a bonus, I believe, tied to which shift had the highest uptime. And what that KPI essentially did was defer all maintenance to the next shift.
and that's where you got to get down to your basics of teamwork, right?
Yeah. It's not just teamwork on the one shift. It's teamwork across the shifts.
And across functions. You know, maybe you should be looking at not only, I'm not sure if that metric was OEE or overall equipment efficiency, but say you're using that to measure the performance of that line. You should also be looking at what was the PM compliance on that shift.
Mm-hmm.
And balance it. You got to have that balanced scorecard approach to make sure you don't get those KPIs that lead to a certain behavior, but sacrifice other things, right?
That's right. Now, I think we covered, everything from the high level support and basic strategy and sizing of your equipment and lines to, operating in those parts. I think, I'm not really sure, I'm going back to this question from Ziad, is, what do we think about reliability and business strategy, and how's that tie into your maintenance management program? What do you think? Did we answer the question?
I think we started. We might have digressed a little bit, but I think we started the right thinking. It's, you have to have your equipment reliability or engineering maintenance and management strategy completely aligned with the business strategy up front with top support. It's very hard for an individual at the lower level, such as a maintenance manager or maintenance engineer, to drive sustainable changes within their site. It's got to start at the top level and come down.
I think, I disagree with you there a little bit, James. I think a good maintenance manager can demonstrate some successes, can put in place some proactive steps, can, stand up and say, hey, no, we need the failure analysis on this. We need to get it right. Let the line be down for an hour and then shield his people, protect his people from the wrath of the operations manager that wants the production to run for that hour. But then demonstrate as the results come in that for the overall month, you increased your overall capacity. You increased your uptime because you did the right thing. Those are hard to do in the moment because there's a lot of pressure to keep the line running.
But it's not sustainable because you're relying on that one individual who's willing to stand up.
Yeah.
Right. And what I find with a lot of maintenance managers or the good ones that do that sort of thing, they're only going to stick around for 2 or 3 years and they're going to go somewhere else because they're sick of putting up that same fight over and over.
That's right. You got to win a few of them and get some champions on your side and get the support. And then they build their program, right? That's where you see turnarounds in facilities is they show some benefits. They show the value of good maintenance program. And then they get the support on board. They get a few people turned over. But if there's continuously the end of quarter push and get the line running, damn it, and all those kinds of things going on, the good guys are going to go to another facility.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's another part of the business strategy. How do you get the right people and keep them? Well, you got to support them.
Exactly. You have to support them. You have to demonstrate that you want, long-term sustainment and investment in that organization, that business, whether it's with people, training, upskilling, all those things, right? Mm-hmm. Resourcing the departments appropriately.
That's right. Yeah. Going back to the trucking description, if you buy just enough trucks to carry the tonnage you need per hour 24/7, you're setting yourself up for failure.
Exactly.
If you can't even put air in the tires, you're done.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, interesting. I think we'll have to ask Ziad. I'll have to send him an email saying, let him know when this episode's coming out and see if we answered the question, if he has any follow-up ones. And it's one of the things I really like about this show is that we're asking people to join us, to go to reliability.fm and look for the episode and or any of the episodes. Give us a comment. You can even go to iTunes and do a ratings and review. But we'd love to hear from you. So figuratively, and hopefully someday in person, we'll grab a cup of coffee and sit down together and talk shop. But you can certainly let us know what you think. And we always like the praise. That's always really good. But we really pay attention to the questions you ask or what you would like us to talk about. So don't be shy and let us know what you think. And with James, thanks for joining us today, but I'm thinking with you on board, maybe we'll open up the floodgates to the all of the maintenance and asset management type questions, because I think we're going to tap into your expertise there quite a bit.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, James.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.